Due to the limitations of the website that houses the podcast, this episode has had to be cut into two parts. However, if you listen on Spotify, you will get the full episode as it was meant to be heard. We now return to our regularly scheduled program, Already in Progress.
That was okay. Volume 2.
That felt like it had more endings than Return of the King.
It did, yeah. This is very definitely setting up future plot lines. If the first one was the origin, and that's pretty much all it dealt with, this is setting up where this is going to go in the future, which leads me to believe this was not supposed to just be a trilogy. I don't know why I get that idea, having read Volume 3. Looks to camera. I get that at this time, Joss Whedon wasn't persona non grata and that style of Buffy speak was very big. But why is Clark a massive smartass to Perry White?
He is just a dick in these issues, isn't he? These volumes, sorry. Like, he is such a smart... Considering he got this job on the good graces of a man who didn't do any research into... Just where did you get this interview from? He's a bit of an ass.
Well, let's be honest. Perry doesn't think that a story of a mass vigilante working outside of Gotham is a story. He wants Clark reporting on the sports in Batman versus Superman. And in Superman Returns, when Jimmy says maybe we should investigate Lex Luthor, Perry says Lex is yesterday's news. So maybe Perry isn't this great editor-in-chief we've been led to believe that he is. As evidence of that, Jimmy says obsessive much.
Yeah.
Which is clearly...
This subplot is wild. Like we mentioned, yeah, so... Straczynski knows that you're going to question why Clark got this job on that. So he has Lois investigate, but Lois is just like, nah, I can't be bothered anymore. I'm sure he's a nice guy.
Yep.
It's like you've paid lip service to us questioning your plot hole, but you've not tried to cover your plot hole.
Yeah, I mean, and why, when is Lois doing this? Should she not be working?
Well, yeah. There's nothing to report on, you know.
Yeah, because Clark's doing it all.
Yeah.
Probably. Again, the alienation of Clark Kent is a little bit, you know, that's the point of him. We've discussed all that. My problem here was with the storytelling issues with the introduction of Parasite, right? Our main villain is Raymond Maxwell Jensen. That is not the name of Parasite in the regular continuity.
Right.
So that's fine. So presumably he changed the name to hide the fact that the Parasite's the villain.
To make it a little plot twist.
Yeah.
This, yeah.
Okay, fine. No problem with that. He's introduced murdering somebody. So we already know he's a bad un.
Yeah. He's introduced murdering someone who was his partner, but let slip that he's murdered other people.
Yes. And he let him watch him kill other people.
Yeah.
Because it turned him on. He's got kind of a murder fetish. But then he tells somebody else and therefore he kills him for it.
Yeah.
Fine. He's too snarky by far for a villain. But again, that was in vogue at the while. But at no point do they show his face properly. There's no reveal of
they try and cover it up a bit. Yeah,
they try to cover it up. All right, so if in storytelling terms, you're covering somebody's face, that implies a big reveal.
It implies we would know who it was.
Yes. That a reveal is coming at some point.
Yeah.
And you will go, oh no, that's who it is.
Yeah.
Like in the Gentleman TV show where we were supposed to be surprised that the Breaking Bad guy who runs the chicken shop.
Right.
Yeah. Giancarlo
Esposito.
Thank you very much. We are supposed to be surprised that he's the bad guy.
Okay.
But you've cast Giancarlo Esposito.
Right.
So it's not really that big of a twist. But in this, they hide that. We don't know who this guy is. The name is different, so it's not even giving us a clue.
So why would you go so far to cover up someone that we don't know?
Exactly right. Because on the following pages, when we do see him, I'm not sure that this was the same bloke.
Because he's just all in full.
Yeah, because now we're showing who he is.
Yeah.
At no point has he been given a splash, an introduction. Screenwriting says that you always do an exterior shot.
Before
to
interior,
tell your audience where your characters are. Even if it's only a shot of a city. All right, they're in that city. Oh, they're in that building.
Yeah.
All right, Michael Knight's in kit as it drives down the road. That kind of thing. We're not given that with this guy. Why is this played as a reveal?
Mm.
I didn't get that. And maybe I missed something. I'll completely go with that. We get introduced to Lisa, who lives in the apartment down the road. She is a red-headed, statuesque, big busted beauty.
Crop top, low cut jeans.
Who is also an actor/model and very sassy.
Yeah, very flirtatious. Invites Clark over for dinner and then slips into some lingerie.
But not Murray Jane. No.
No.
Not in any way, Murray Jane. This, all right, you're younger than I am.
Okay.
So let's run this past the young people.
Okay.
Even though you're approaching 30. This is a middle-aged man fantasy neighbor, right?
This
hot redhead throws herself at the main character.
Yeah.
The dialogue isn't so much double entendre as single entendre.
Yeah.
It is nothing but suggestive innuendo.
I don't want to say like reading this character was uncomfortable, but this was very much, she was created and written by a middle-aged man, drawn by
a middle-aged man, I presume.
And yeah, everything about her, like, Straczynski almost kind of wants a young redhead to come onto her this him come onto him this hard. It's like, yeah, this is just a fancy, and she essentially exists, let's be honest, to make Clark think about getting it on, to bring up the whole Man of Steel, Woman of Paper gag again.
Yeah,
it's to just be the butt of giving Clark an erection gag at one point. And then as we get further on, of course she's also a prostitute, so that Clark can then go, but it's okay, I'm a really nice guy and I will still be friends with you because I'm a nice guy. It's very much that kind of whole thing of just like, you've essentially just created a woman character just so that you can shit on her to make your male main character look great.
See, I didn't. This is really well said. When I was reading it, I actually felt this was like the most cringeworthy thing I've ever seen Straczynski write.
Yeah.
And I was, is this me? I'm 50. I felt this was very, very, very obvious. She literally walks away singing, touch me, to this guy she's just met.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, is that valid? Do girls do that now?
If they don't, I haven't met one, but, you know.
Neither have I.
But that's exactly it. And it's one of those things that kind of feels a bit more awkward when you realise who wrote this and drew this.
And was it acceptable 10 years ago?
See, I don't... And it begs the question.
Because I'd forgotten about her as a character completely.
Yeah. It's one of those things that, like, you know, there's been a lot of discussion over the years about the depiction of people in your comics. Depiction should always, you know, it should be challenged to certain degrees. You know, I guess for a long time, comics were very much a boys' club.
Yeah.
And I feel like, again, just as much as the first volume is a time capsule of, you know, fashion and how things were at the time, this is the same as well. You know, what did we write and draw female characters like this? Yes, we definitely did. Should it have been questioned? Yeah, absolutely it should have.
But my problem with it was I couldn't believe this was the same guy who 10 years before this had written Susan Ivanova.
Right.
In Babylon 5.
Because it's like the cheesecake, but without the fun.
Well, I didn't have a problem with her as a character being as outgoing and as forthright as she is. I have no problem with that at all. I don't know. It felt weird.
Yeah. And again, like I mentioned, I think one of the reasons why I felt it was a bit weird is she only exists so that Clark can react to something.
Yes.
And to make him look good. The bit where she does reveal that she's been hustling on the side, it's just a throwaway one panel thing that makes you then go, oh no, yeah, because of course,
well,
she
is. It's so he can save her at the end on one of her tricks.
To make him look good.
But he doesn't look good because, as we will mention, his other roommate, who lives in the apartment block with him, he's not a roommate, is this Eddie guy.
Yeah.
Who is a junkie.
Now, this confused me for a little bit. I had to reread it. Because of the art style, all the men look exactly the same. Let's point that out. Lois's boyfriend, who's in App Age, looks just like Jimmy Olsen, that I thought that she was dating Jimmy Olsen.
I thought she was dating Shaggy. Yeah. I'll be honest with you.
And then you get to the end, and this guy who's beating What's-Her-Face looks just like the junkie sat on the steps. So when he dumps him in Alaska and then goes back and they found his body, I was a bit like, hang on, I thought we just dumped him in Alaska.
Yeah. All right, that's valid, I guess. My issue with it was he finds this junkie guy living on the steps. The junkie guy is actually quite a nice guy. His problem is he's just got a drug problem.
Yeah.
And this being a Superman story, I was honestly expecting to there be a moment where Clark takes him to rehab.
Right.
Or tries to get him help.
Yeah.
Does something for him. He uses X-ray vision. He literally sees the train.
Yeah.
He literally sees the tram lines on his arms. He knows this guy's got a problem.
Yeah.
But what Straczynski does very well, though, is he doesn't portray him as a strung-out addict.
Mm.
He's a normal guy who has a drug problem.
Yeah.
And so I was expecting at some point Clark's going to take him to Loudermilk.
Right.
Which is a great show. You should watch it. And get him help.
Mm.
Or... Oh, no, even do that. And then he still ends up dead. He still overdoses and that makes Clark angry or whatever. Well, Clark does nothing for this guy.
But his story as well, what very little there is that he's isolated and wants to be heard. And that could have saved his life. Surely in your story in which the main character is isolated, you would create a parallel or a relationship between the two then.
I actually think, I mean, it's easy to armchair quarterback, but would it not have been better to not have Lisa and have Clark develop a friendship with this junkie guy who he tries to help?
Yeah.
He does everything within his power to help him and he still ends up dead.
But then
there's a story.
But then without that, you don't get the teenage boy hormones subplot, which is a thing in this.
I would argue the story is better if we don't have that.
Yeah.
Because then you've got a really good, actually, definition of the limits of Superman's powers without falling back on the Jonathan Kent has a heart attack and I couldn't save him trope.
Yeah.
If you have him, he builds up a friendship with this guy and then eventually gets to a point where he says, you've got a problem, haven't you? And the guy says, yes, I have. Right. I'm going to try and help you. And he does try and help him and he still overdoses.
Yeah.
That's a great character art for Clark Kent. Here's a guy who is, as you say, his parallel. He's emotionally disconnected from the world. Clark's got Superman to fall back on. This guy's got drugs. Clark tries to help him and fails.
Yeah.
You've got a limitation to his abilities, though. You've got a character art.
Yeah.
What's the character art with Lisa? Oh, well, she makes me horny and I stopped her boyfriend from beating her up.
Yeah.
Is that a character arc?
No. But it comes back to Clark being reactive. These things exist so Clark can react to them.
There again, if he'd made an effort to help Eddie and get him off the drugs and take him, be his sponsor or whatever, and it had gone wrong. I just think that's a much more interesting and modern character art than what happens here. Clark just ignores the guy.
If you want to go the extra mile... He could then, in the third volume, find out his secret identity and then becomes his number one fan. You've just modernised Bibbo.
That's very true. Yeah, but that relies on him not dying in volume two.
Yeah, yeah.
That relies on Clark helping him.
Well, did you not find it weird as well when he then does write this newspaper article about him too late and then Perry throws it out because he's like, well, I don't want this.
Yep. But that article is what made Lois change her mind.
Yeah.
You know, and he loved Bob Dylan. That's literally all we know about the guy. And it's
even more annoyed. If I was trying to reach out to someone and they felt so bad that they wrote a newspaper article based on the one time that they heard me sing a Bob Dylan song.
Well, that's it as well. He feels so bad that he writes a newspaper article about him. You knew he had a problem and Superman and you did nothing.
Yeah. Also, you know, where's he got this photo from? No one's taken that photo.
Maybe it's in his apartment.
Is he just a really good painter as well?
He's an exceptionally gifted painter as well, yeah. This is very, very, very nitpicky. Lisa tells Clark that the Rocky Horror Picture Show plays every night at midnight.
Yeah.
Why the different times on the marquee?
That's, yeah.
It's on at midnight every night. It's not on at 8:45. In fact, if your cinema is only playing the Rocky Horror Picture Show every 2 hours, it's not going to make money. But as a midnight screening, that was a thing, wasn't it, for a while?
So. See, that bit did make sense, but yeah.
Yeah, and she's taking him for a first date to watch Rocky Horror.
Yeah.
Subtle.
Yeah.
The Lois scene with Shaggy baffled me slightly, because what was it showing us? How did that move the character of Lois along? It's showing that she's obsessive.
Mm.
We know that.
Yeah.
That she's a dreadful girlfriend because she's married to a job. We know that.
Yeah.
that her boyfriend is a massive bore. All right, we didn't know that, but it didn't tell us anything about her we didn't know.
And it also feels like it exists just to frame the conversation that's happening on the chat show TV that's on in the background.
Mm.
That's the main focus of it.
National News Network, yeah, copied by Michael Burler. It actually makes her less sympathetic as a character.
Yeah.
But here's the thing as well, Lois can be not sympathetic at times. I like that about her.
She's difficult. Yeah.
You could lose these two pages and it don't matter.
Yeah. But we then get on to this next bit. I think this should have been the focus of the story because I actually found this to be great stuff. And this is where you get...
Where he actually interferes with the country and takes down a dictator.
This is where you get how do you make Superman interesting and relevant. You've got so many political incidents throughout the world happening right now.
Yeah.
And yet...
As we speak.
Yeah, Superman could stop that, but should he? Is a fascinating modern question for Superman, which unfortunately is limited to two, albeit the most interesting two pages of what's just a generic bad guy versus good guy comic.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought this was going to go somewhere completely differently.
Yeah, well,
I was disappointed when volume three didn't follow up on this.
And I thought this was going to be more than just the back. This is essentially the equivalent of the bit in Superman 2 where he doesn't have his powers, so the guy in the truck stop beats him up and then he goes back to beat him up. This is what that is. But
he doesn't beat him up. I hate that. This is a Snyder defense.
Okay.
Clark goes and beats up the bully. How is that any different to him dumping the truck on top of the spider? He does not go and beat him up. Clark does not raise a hand to that man at all. Yeah,
but you know that's what I mean. It's a bookend gag, and that's... This is treated as a bookend gag. Yeah,
this should have been the story. He's young and naive. He's gone over to this third world country where they've got a dictator.
Yeah.
Does he take him out because he can?
Yeah.
And by doing it, he knows he will make that country better.
Yeah.
Possibly. And my thinking was he should have done it and it shouldn't have made it better. Because it should have had that country descend into civil war.
But it's really good as well because, like you just said, Clark does not raise a hand against the guy in the truck stop. Superman doesn't take down the dictator here.
No.
All he does is free the prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, again, that's interesting because what did Superman do? And that's him being proactive.
Yep.
It's genuinely really interesting stuff and there should have been more of it. Now, fortunately, there are other stories where they do similar things much more effectively than this, but this would have been an interesting way of doing it.
Well, I thought when I was rereading these, I'd read all of them that came out, so by and large, I'd completely forgotten.
The only one I hadn't read was the third one.
Yeah. I thought the third one was going to be about that. I didn't think it was going to be this boring General Zod rehash. Oh, sorry. destroyed Krypton. There you go.
To be fair to volume three, which I will not be later on, but to give it some fairness, at least that does kind of stem from this.
Yeah. But I like you, I thought they would have done more with that because that was an interesting idea that you can only get away with in this.
Yeah.
It would seem a bit strange now to have 40-year-old Superman who's married with kids suddenly decide to get involved in politics.
Yeah.
If you're going to do it in regular continuity. So this actually felt like an interesting idea. This is, like you say, this story addresses whether Superman can have sex or not. It's referencing Larry Niven's Man of Steel, Women of Kleenex essay, but it doesn't pay off.
No.
Was the ending of this, he shags Lisa? And that got nixed by editorial.
Right.
I mean, you know, does all foreplay no climax? You know. I like the cat story.
Yeah.
I thought the cat story was quite
touching. I think that was the only bit throughout all the three volumes where I actually felt something reading it.
That Clark had this pet cat and he buries him on the moon. And I love the idea at some point some astronaut's going to go to the moon and find this dead cat.
Well, doesn't he mention it as well? That someone's going to question it later on.
Probably going to get in trouble for that at some point. Yeah, but people know he's Superman now.
Yeah.
So you can just say, yeah, I buried my dead cat up there. You got a problem with that?
And there is the cute bit where, like, he does shack up with Lisa and he looks at the moon and he's like, yeah, see, I did do it.
Yeah. So that I like the cat story. The story picks up almost pretty much exactly after volume one, doesn't it?
Mm.
So Metropolis has barely got over being trashed at the end of volume one. And then it gets trashed again by Parasite.
Yeah.
But in this instance, most of the destruction is actually done by the military.
Yes.
So how does the military argue then that they need a way of stopping Superman? If Superman wasn't actually the one responsible for all this destruction, they were.
Mm.
Now, I know they're probably going to rewrite history slightly, but you're in the middle of a major metropolitan area. Presumably some camera phones film this.
Yeah, especially when you've already set up that one of your main characters will throw himself into the battlefield just to take a photo.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff in this in the Fortress of Solitude. I actually found the Fortress of Solitude stuff some of the worst dialogue writing that Straczynski's done. He's normally quite good with dialogue.
Again, is this when it tries to be funny again?
Yeah, he's a much better writer than this. It's, again, this is trying to do that Joss Whedon snappy, smart-ass dialogue.
Yeah.
And again, in Whedon's defense, in terms of his writing, he only did that in Buffy.
Right.
He never did it in Angel or Firefly or Dollhouse.
Yeah.
That kind of teen speak thing where he invented a language.
Well, Firefly.
Yeah, but he's not doing, it's not the same.
It's not teen speak.
Yeah. It's not like obsessive much.
Yeah.
Or what's the sitch? He's not inventing an own teen vernacular.
Right, okay.
That will date in 10 years. He made that up so it wouldn't date.
Right.
This does.
Yeah.
Because who's the real Superman here? In this scene, Superman's been a snappy smart ass with his AI in the way that Clark was a snappy smart ass with Perry at the beginning.
He's just the same person, he's just wearing a different outfit.
But Clark's not a snappy smart ass with anybody else.
Right.
So why is he a snappy smart ass with Perry and an AI computer?
Just don't know.
It's not like he's made this a Clark Kent who's a David Addison smart mouth.
Yeah.
Can reel off jokes like that, rat-a-tat-tat, Robin Williams style.
Yeah.
There's none of that. So that didn't work for me. Did you? I mean, he does let the dialogue breathe a bit in the fight with Parasite.
Oh, yeah, he gives us a page off.
Yeah, he gives us a page of fighting. And then, you know. Is this Parasite more Doomsday than Parasite?
It did feel that.
Yeah.
It's not one of my favourite modern-day redesigns either. I didn't get the apples in the mouth.
No.
And it also did feel like it was setting something up that wouldn't...
That wouldn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where, like, when he loses his powers and then he just gets them back two pages later.
Well, there's, again, similarities to Superman 2. A supervillain tries to threaten Metropolis with the Daily Planet staff, fights Superman. Superman loses his powers, has to use the fortress to ultimately defeat the bad guy.
Yeah.
That's broad strokes. That's the plot of Superman 2.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. I mean, Superman being depowered does serve a purpose because it makes him feel human for the first time. I mean, as we talked about in Volume 1, this Superman was forced into action. He didn't do it for a noble reason. He didn't do it because he felt it was a calling.
Yeah.
So he's still, and because he's so isolated from humanity, he doesn't do it because it's the right thing to do. So he's still trying to learn who humanity is. He's not got that grounding that, say, Smallville gives him.
Right.
Or growing up in Smallville gives him. So he knows they can be a good people if they choose to be. But this Clark hasn't seen that.
Yeah.
He's seen nothing but people try to bring him down.
And then he loses his powers and takes a walk through the rough side of the neighborhood.
So like, when he's depowered, he experiences what being a human is like. A very superficial level.
Also, in all fairness, he nearly gets hit by a car because he jaywalks. This is learning that humans are fragile because he's a moron.
There is that.
This isn't some kind of big reveal to him. This is him walking into traffic.
No, that's very, very true. We've also got the scene where Lisa has put Clark in bed and taken his clothes off.
Yeah.
Play that the other way around.
Yeah.
Bit creepy.
Yeah.
But here it's a joke because it's a woman doing it to a man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, she's already coming on to it.
Yeah. So, it's whatever. So basically what happens here is the trick that Lisa has picked up this night, presumably to pay a bit of rent, is beating on her with a belt. Clark hears this, zooms into her apartment, leaves his glasses behind, and Lisa doesn't go,
Hang on.
A guy's just shown up in Metropolis who can fly and move really, really fast. I genuinely thought this was how she was going to find out who he was. But this isn't subtle.
No, but everyone forgets this. This isn't mentioned ever again.
It's vaguely mentioned in Volume 3. It is a play on the you're not hitting a woman now,
which
golden age trope, which I'm fine with.
I wouldn't have minded this if it was just, if he just overheard someone else or whatever. It's the fact that it has to be her that he's rescuing.
In our revamped version of this, where Lisa doesn't exist and he's made friends with Eddie, he just saved his next door neighbour.
Yeah.
He could just save his next door neighbour from a wife-beating husband. And he's met her a few times. You see it in volume one.
And he's seen the bruise every once in a while, that kind of
and
thing.
And this just snaps and goes over the head and dumps him in Alaska and like, right, you hit her again. Next time I'll leave you on the moon.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. No problem with that. And I do like the final scene with Superman overthrowing a dictator, because like you say, that's actually quite fascinating, because it's taking him in the direction of the authority. And if you have a look at my notes here, I wrote this reading as I went along. It's going to be fascinating to see what JMS does with this. Spoiler, he does jack all with it.
But you see so many things. This has become done to death now. This is the new Red Eyes of Doom, bad guy Superman.
Yeah,
this isn't bad guy Superman. This is good guy Superman learning that doing the right thing shouldn't necessarily be done by you.
Yes.
And it's really interesting. I think this could have been done really well now, especially reading it in the era of The Boys and
Superman,
Superman should kill.
Yeah.
Like, show me why he can, but doesn't or shouldn't.
Yeah, that's a much more interesting story.
Yeah.
This is why I will bang this drum until the dying day. The actual script for Superman 4 is actually a good idea.
Right.
The film's terrible.
Yeah.
Well, that's not the script's fault. Mm. The actual idea that Superman goes, right, I'm going to rid the world of nuclear arms.
Yeah.
And then him realizing, wait a minute, there's a reason I don't get involved in politics. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
It's a good idea for a story. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. We get the Luthers at the end, Alexandra and Lex. So it's technically they're both Lex Luthor. Pretty sure that's supposed to be Thingio from Dyad.
Gruber, yeah. Bit of Donald Sutherland.
Yeah, a little bit of Donald Sutherland. So Shane Davis going back to his actor well.
I do love the name Lex Squirt is then only ever mentioned once after this. Yeah.
This felt denser than the first one. Seems to be more focused on Clark and his burgeoning career as a reporter and a superhero. But as you mentioned, there's a lot of tonal disconnecting. The Fortress, Superman's quippy and a smartass. He's a quippy smartass with Perry in the opening scene. But for the rest of the book, he's like Edward Cullen.
Mm.
He's just morose and sulky. So who's the real Clark Kent? Is he a serious man trying to find his way in the world? Or is he a snappy smartass? He doesn't seem to differentiate between Clark and Superman at all.
Yeah.
And Superman involves himself in Clark's problems. Clark gets to interview Superman. He helps Lisa, but he ignores Eddie, the drug addict, mainly because Lisa's got a nice rat.
Yeah.
That seems to be the reason. Like we've said, he sees the needle and does nothing. And I waited throughout this entire volume to help him, and he never did. And it seemed like that, along with the disposing of the dictator, was going to play into Superman acting local but thinking global.
Yeah.
But never paired off.
It's, again, like the first one, is this isn't bad, but it never pushes through that boundary of being anything better than good. It'll show indications sometime of like, oh, this might be interesting, but then just doesn't, never gets any better than just being fine. To quote myself, probably the first time we ever covered this, it's just all right.
Yeah.
It is just all right.
And the amount of cheesecake with Lex's wife at the end.
Yeah.
Where she's just parading around nude.
And this felt weird. This epilogue, which just recaps something that we already read last page.
Yeah.
You've already told us this. We don't need another two pages.
We do not. But we do need volume 3.
Yeah.
Ardian Syaf. I got that wrong earlier, and I inadvertently said Adrian, so apologies for that. And Sandra Hope took over as artist. And it's revealed that the Kiss Army were led to Earth by, drumroll, General Zod. You didn't see that coming, did you? I mean, the fact that I spoiled it about 10 minutes ago. However, Zod tries to play both sides against each other, telling Superman he's a relative from Krypton here to do good and get to know his nephew, whilst also telling the UN Security Council that he's here to stop Superman before he can do to Earth what he did to Krypton. Ooh, nefarious. The UN turned to the super intelligent science duo Lex 2, Lex Cubed, a.k.a. the husband and wife team, Alexander and Alexandra Luthor. It's really lucky that he found somebody with that name to marry, wasn't it? They design a red frequency weapon that theoretically could stop Superman. As Zod continues his campaign to convince the world of his benevolence, Clark is growing closer to Lisa, who has learned his secret, which you'd have to be pretty dense to not learn it after the last one. Zod has the UN Council swear to not intervene in any battle between he and Kal-El. He lures Superman out of his starship, which contains kryptonite. With Superman weakened, he manages to escape and again flees to the fortress. It's a bit repeat, rinse and repeat this, isn't it? Where he learns of Zod's culpability in the destruction of Krypton. Meanwhile, Alexandra and Major Lee persuade Lex to use his red frequency weapon against Superman, which nearly results in Superman's death. Before the death blow, however, Lisa crashes a pickup into Zod's face. Lex, feeling guilty about the weapon he has created, uses this opportunity to use it on Zod, but Zod pitches a crowbar in Lex's direction and it goes right through his chest. Ooh, big sucking wound. Superman puts Zod down with Alexandra's help, but she blames Superman for Lex's death. Yeah, okay. Superman takes Lex's weapon as he leaves. The wrap-up. Superman tells the UN they are morons and takes Lisa to meet Martha. He and Lois also reach a new agreement. Having already built a super signal, she will basically be his Commissioner Gordon. Alexandra Luthor steals the kryptonite and tells Major Lee she will not rest until Superman is dead. Every loose end tied up
neatly
in this always intended to be a trilogy of books.
Yeah. It's quite interesting because the three main ones, they were a trilogy, and I do wonder how much of that was intentional or how much of it was just a case of, let's just make it so it's all uniform and just get rid of it.
Well, Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman.
Yeah, they just wanted this line to go away quietly, so just thought, let's just make it a trilogy of three.
Why did it go away quietly? Because Straczynski was still writing for DC, and DiDio hadn't left at this point. Why did they just stop doing them?
Unless it was just a case of they just weren't selling as much as they would have liked, and Batman Volume 2 and 3 were far off in the distance, maybe.
Because Geoff Johns took so long to get them done. Possibly, I don't know. I should have tweeted Straczynski and asked him, shouldn't I?
Does he do that? Does he reply to things? Okay.
And asked, look, why I flatly refuse to believe this was always intended to be three and that's it.
Mm.
That the reading of it completely undermines that statement, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I feel like one of the more realistic aspects of this book is that Superman has been around a while and the politicians are just sat around and talked about it, but not actually done anything.
Yeah.
The art change is largely unnoticeable. No disrespect to Adrian Syaf.
It feels a bit more cartoony, but it's still that same kind of realistic, hyper-rendered.
Yeah. And the thing with him waking up from a bad dream and putting his fist through the wall and then plastering it up and painting it before.
I thought I enjoyed this. This was a fun Peter Parker-esque gag.
Oh, I thought that was a bit crap.
It did feel a bit funny how the landlord was like, I heard wood splinter when he's clearly punching through the wall. Like,
yeah, and presumably the wall is brick, but you don't know.
Yeah, but I thought there was a cute gag at least.
Yes, okay, all right. Congress hire the Luthers to put together a weapon that can take down Superman. The Luthers are both massive jerks. Massively condescending.
But yeah.
In a twist that actually worked, Lex is the less arrogant of the two of them.
Lex, I really liked Lex.
I didn't mind Lex, yeah. I thought Lex was fine.
I don't think good guy Lex has never been done before. It's probably been done quite a few times. But the fact that not only is he the good guy, but he's also the outspoken one of the couple as well.
Mm.
Like, she's the Lex Luthor. He's just behind the scenes.
Lisa is even more like Mary Jane in this one because Adrian Syaf now draws her with flat hair.
Yeah.
Rather than the curly hair that she had before.
Again, going back to how everything in these books pay a function. She's here. She loses an earring so that she can come back later to find the earring to then find the costume.
But what I didn't understand about that, right? Clearly she could have figured it out from what happened last time.
We've forgotten about that.
Why do we need the earring thing?
Because it's a new volume?
Left his glasses behind, and the guy who was beating her has suddenly disappeared.
Yeah.
So when she took the glasses back to Clark, what did he say? Oh yeah, sorry about that.
I must have just left them here last time I was here.
Yeah, I think I'd have noticed, Clark, that if you'd left without your glasses, how did you see?
Yeah.
And it's like you had the perfect way for her to figure it out.
Yeah.
Because when she does actually figure it out, I think I've got that further down here. Why is his suit left in the closet? Why is he not wearing it? If he's got to go into action as Superman, does he have to fly home and get changed first?
Yeah.
It doesn't make a lick of sense. It would have made much more sense if this first scene here with Lisa and Clark in this volume had been her coming around with the glasses and going, I think you dropped these, Superman.
Right, yeah. But instead, you've got to have the will they, won't they? Then yeah, and then here we as well back at the Daily Planet, we've got more of Clark being a bit of a dick.
Yes, I'm tougher, Jimmy.
Yeah,
I don't mind tougher, Jimmy. I'm not overly pleased with the super signal.
This seemed a bit dumb, and this just felt like the Batmanification of Superman.
Yeah,
especially down to the fact that Lois is wearing a trench coat
and stood on the roof next to the signal, waiting for the hero to arrive.
He just needs to have a pipe. In fact,
she should have had
lean into it, own it.
That would have been funny. And at the end of it, Superman should have disappeared in the middle of the conversation.
And again, he does that though, but he comes off as incredibly unlikable once again. He doesn't like what Lois is telling him. He doesn't like to be told that all of his actions aren't correct, so he runs off in a strop. Yeah, he's got someone to go rescue, but Superman will just go, excuse me, gotta go sort this out. Not, I don't want to hear this anymore.
Yeah, there's the whole key to his character sometimes, I think, is who are you? A friend. And yet he's not acting like a friend.
No.
In any way whatsoever. So
it's almost like he's helping you, but he doesn't want to do
yeah.
it. Like, Superman, can you rescue my cat from a tree? Oh, fine, I guess.
Why, how have you got your cat in a tree again?
It is Superman, but uncharacteristically.
Superman as petulant teenager.
Yeah, like, he's not doing anything that Superman wouldn't do, but he's thrown a strop about it.
He's letting you know
that he doesn't want to do this.
No, that he's done it.
Yeah.
It's like, you could have thanked me for doing it.
I'm not doing this because you told me to. I'm doing this because I'm Superman.
He never does it just for altruism.
Yeah.
So General Zod arrives, and if you were surprised by the revelation that Zod was behind Krypton's destruction, well, I'd be amazed. Quite frankly.
The last two volumes have never dipped into bad territory. Volume 3 does, and we're gonna start with Zod, right?
Mm.
The massive, massive disconnect between art and story. And that Zod here, he's got a hood over his face, completely covering his face. You don't see his eyes. He's always scowling. He's got a massive claw. And yet we're supposed to believe that he might be helpful when he's sat in the UN, still with his hood up, with his claw out. He's going to Superman. I'm your uncle. I'm here to help you. With his hood up and his claw. And it's one of those things where it's like, you're not even trying to be convincing at this point.
Well, again, I've got that note later on earlier on. I mean, first of all, let's get out the way that basically this means that this volume has exactly the same plot as volume one.
Yeah, yeah.
Superpowered invader with a connection to Krypton's destruction comes to Earth to kill Superman. And all three volumes have superpowered beings smashing each other's skulls in flattening Metropolis.
Yeah.
So all three of them have a very big echo of rinse and repeat. So the UN are quite willing to accept this guy shows up.
Yeah.
Tells them, I'm here to solve your problems. I can take out Superman.
Yeah.
And at no point do the UN go, wait a minute, what if he turns on us?
Well, that's it as well. And this is why I think this is the weakest volume of the three of them. And it does lean into just eye-rollingly bad at times. The whole point of this is that the UN are very distrustful of Superman, especially because of his actions with the dictatorship in Volume 2.
Yeah.
And they would like to have him out of the picture. And if they can turn a blind eye to it and someone else does it, all the better. But they entrust the man with the same power level, who is not wearing the brightly coloured costume, but the hood over his face and the massive claw.
Yep.
How does this, none of this make sense? And all of this exists just so that Skrzynski can carry on and keep his train rattling along to where he wants to go with it. But none of it makes sense.
Yeah, and does America not have that same thing with hoodies that we have?
Yeah.
That you have to take your hood down when you go into shops.
It's just, you've got a hilarious panel where he's sat amongst the UN with his claw on the table and his hood on the face, and he's telling them, I can solve your problems for them, and they all go, well, yes, no, he can get rid of Superman is the real problem, not the man with the claw. Yes, yes, yes. It's why, even within its own context, this doesn't work. If they don't trust the all-powerful immigrant, which, again, would have been some interesting story to delve into,
yeah.
Why are they trusting the scary-looking hooded immigrant with a big claw?
Yeah, that didn't... I mean, Superman hangs a lantern on it at the end. But even though,
which again is, yeah. Are you all stupid? What are you thinking?
And
he turns around and Superman does threaten the UN, which does give them clearance to then get a little bit defensive around him.
Yeah, it's not a patch on his speech to the UN in Superman 4, which Christopher Reeve delivers absolutely fantastic.
So much of this is just mad.
Well, I thought Lisa and Clark's relationship was better in this one.
Yeah.
I mean, again, she's even more Murray Jane than previously. Buxom, redhead, confidant, actor, model, sex worker. Well, all right, maybe not a sex worker. But she's a lot less the middle-aged man's fantasy in this.
She's mellowed out and become a character.
Yeah, and has he asked a woman to help him with the writing? Because Alexandra is also quite well-characterised in this one.
Mm.
I'd expected to see more about Lisa and Clark's sex life. Because that was a massive preoccupation last time. This time, not mentioned at all.
Well,
has he got bored?
I think by the time we start this, they're not even together, are they? They've gone back to being friends.
Yeah.
She even says, oh, I care about you like a brother, which is kind of weird. Because if I was dating a girl and she said that to me, that's a big red flag.
Yeah, that's it, right? Time to move on, I think. I do like as well the relationship with Lisa means that he hasn't gone down the trope of instantly falling in love with Lois from the moment that he meets her.
Mm.
So I like that that's not been a thing. They've actually been quite antagonistic. And him finding out in this volume that she's been investigating even makes them a little frosty with each other. And even her relationship with Superman, because she's not got that connection in this.
Yeah.
She didn't get the first story.
Yeah.
So even they aren't what they were in any other volumes. And I wonder why, of all the things that you've already mentioned of the updating and modernising, why that was the one that he chose to remove completely.
Don't know. And it's kind of a shame as well, because it would have made some interesting conversation and scenes between them to see that schism, because Lois is completely right in doing what she's doing. But it felt weird because this... And again, oh, you've noticed my little plot twist, but I'm not going to fill in the cracks. Lois is depicted as the bad guy for doing it when she had every right to. She's doing a background check on this nobody who walked in.
She's doing what Perry should have done.
Yeah, this nobody walked in with the interview of the century and was given a job. Lois is right to have background checked him.
Yeah,
Perry should have background checked. HR should. The Daily Planet does not have an
HR
department.
Clearly not. That's because they would have done a background check, yeah, and made sure that he was all right. And the problem with having Alexandra and Alexander Luthor involved in the UN means that Major Lee just becomes a background player. So again, he set this character up to have something important to say.
Yeah.
And then does nothing with it. He introduced another female character who he really essentially steals what Major Lee should be doing.
Major Lee kind of takes a bit of a Nick Fury kind of role in this, because she's still around and she's knocking about and controlling things, but is very much the person behind the scenes.
Yeah, and then you get halfway through this and the Zod thing. I can't believe Zod, that Superman fell for this.
I can't believe that Superman does not go back to his exposition spaceship in the Fortress of Solitude until later on.
Yeah.
Surely if this stranger shows up going, I'm your uncle, I'm here to help you, I'd go do a background check.
Yeah.
I'd go check my Kryptonian HR.
This is where it lost me. Congress have done nothing but fret about Superman since he turned up. So like we say, he's shown up with his hood covering his face and they simply agree to let him deal with Superman and not interfere.
Yeah.
And like you say, when he goes and tells Superman a complete pack of lies, at no point does Superman go, well, I've got this all-intelligent AI back at the Fortress that would know if this guy was my uncle.
He knows my entire history, yeah.
Maybe I should go and ask it and say, look, is this on the up and up? And he doesn't.
No.
He doesn't even think to do that. I know. But you've already... I was going to say, I know this Superman's not a super smart, but he is.
Yeah.
We saw him Volume 1.
Already said, and I did love as well, this was genuinely... I caught myself laughing and sighing at the same time. You've got the bit where the bridge has collapsed and Lois is there because, you know, she's investigating it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They found the piece of the bridge that has melted at stupidly high degrees. Nothing could have done this. Mm-hmm. And Lois turns around and there just so happens to be... because of course there is, a CCTV camera pointing at the direct place that would give her the identity of the person. Again, this has to happen because this has to happen. Because you don't even get a bit like, say, in Blade Runner, where Deckard kills his two leads and then just has a stroke of luck to carry on with the plot, because without it, you'd be stuck.
It's over.
Everything is so convenient in this world. This happens to lead into this, and then that has to happen to this. And don't think about how that happens, because the only reason it does happen is we've got to go get to this scene.
See, I'm kind of like, I didn't dislike these as much as you did, but I'm kind of finding hard to disagree with your problems with
it. But I didn't dislike them. There were bits in there that were really good and bits that left me wanting more.
He's
yeah.
good a writer for it to be crap.
At its worst, it is Volume 3 kind of come on. But at its best, it's interesting, but not interesting enough, or doesn't deliver on that anyway. It's not, these aren't bad, and you know, if you want to read them as Elseworld tales, then fine, you know, they're perfectly fine for what they are, but they're nothing better than that.
Yeah, and there is earlier on I mentioned that there was one element of this which was his kickback to Man of Steel, and that's him, Superman, saying to Zod, do you want to take this somewhere else, so
yeah.
that Metropolis doesn't get trashed again.
Yeah.
But that kind of belies the point that in the previous two volumes, Straczynski has had Metropolis get trashed and no mention whatsoever that there was any civilian collateral damage.
No, it's one of those things that you always get it in like your big blockbusters, that amount of damage, but you never see the after effect. It would have been interesting to see maybe a portion.
See, Superman, you did.
Yeah.
You saw Bruce Wayne try to rescue people.
So it would have been nice, maybe, if you've still got a portion of Metropolis that's been reconstructed. Maybe you've got cranes in the background. And it is quite nice seeing a Superman, this Superman anyway, actively say, come on, let's go elsewhere and let's do this somewhere
let's
else.
Go to the desert.
Especially when the reason why the UN have let Zod do this is because of all this collateral damage, yet they're complicit in it.
Yeah. And yeah, they flatly refuse to help him.
Yeah.
But also the other thing that they took from Man of Steel is humanity isn't giving Superman a reason to not hate them.
Yeah.
As with the movies, we're not shown many people liking him or being on his side other than like a few panels.
Yeah.
For the most part, most of humanity seems to be at best ambivalent to him and at worst actively thinking he's a threat.
So maybe you want to tell an Elseworld story where, because of this, that leads him to being a bit of a bad guy who will take power. That could be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and then as a result of this, Superman is then also aggressive towards humanity. And it's one of those things of, well... are you a good guy? Are you not? What
yeah.
is this? What is the relationship between Superman and humanity in this? What
there isn't one.
What Superman and what story is Straczynski really trying to tell here? Because it
yeah.
seems a bit all over the place.
Yeah, I will agree with that. But there's also the bit where the Kiss Army shows up and we get it from Zod's point of view.
Yeah.
Zod tells them that not one Kryptonian is to survive. Does he also mean himself?
Yeah.
So at some point, are they going to turn on him?
Because he's like, well, if I can't control Krypton's fate, then no one can.
But he survived.
Yeah.
So that didn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. And it just kind of fizzles out a bit, doesn't it?
It does. I do like Lex Luthor. This scene at the end does feel a bit... again, a bit wishy-washy. We'll depower Superman, but then I'll feel a bit guilty, so I'll depower Zod, and, you know, you've got to do it now. And it feels a bit silly, but I liked it. I like Lex Luthor in this, and I like...
I like that Lex was the one who said, this is sadistic.
And ultimately, it's his sacrifice. It's a satisfying twist on the Lex Luthor character that essentially he saves Superman, but he saves Superman having just essentially put him on to a death sentence.
Yeah. So, and you've got the thing. I've read an interview on the Collected Editions website,
right,
with Straczynski, where he said the first volume he wanted it to be called Truth.
Justice.
The second Justice, which means this one is the American way.
Right.
But if so, that's quite cynical take on it.
Mm.
Because in this, the US government is portrayed as craven, weak, terrified of any change to the status quo, weak-willed and stupid.
Which is why Straczynski's own idea of having Superman stand for the world instead of just America is the more interesting one, I think.
Well, they're also, the government, like we just said, the military just stand by and let him get wailed on.
Yeah.
After he saved some of those lives. I mean, that general was at least, you know, I'm sorry.
Orders are orders.
But yeah, they are willing to kill somebody here who has done nothing but try and help, despite everything they've tried against him.
Yeah.
And they're willing to just turn over power to a corrupt liar.
Yeah.
So if you follow that law, he's never said that one, this volume was called that.
Right.
But if that was the title of the previous two,
it implies.
It's kind of implied. So I did quite like Lex changed his mind and went and saved him. I was a bit baffled why. Where did Lisa get the bulldozer truck from? Did I miss that?
I think they landed on a construction site.
All right. Okay. So fair enough.
It did seem a bit strange that crashing into a full powered Kryptonian like this would throw him across. He's not even depowered at this stage, but he's got to. The story's got to keep rattling.
Yes. So, and you get to the end of it where Lex basically sacrifices himself to save Superman. And Alexandria actually shows up and helps take Zod down. But at the end, she's got exactly the same thing that we saw in the last volume.
Yeah.
That she sees Zod kill Lex. She sees Lex sacrifice himself to save Superman. She herself was the one that convinced Lex to build the weapon and use it.
Yeah.
Against his will.
Yeah.
He didn't want to do it. But this is all Superman's fault.
Because that's what villains do.
Well, because that's what it's setting up, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's setting up that she will be
the Lex Luthor
of any subsequent volumes. But this is a 3-volume trilogy.
Well, that scene as well is very heavy-handed. No, it was Alexandra Luthor who died that night. I will be Lex Luthor from next. Yeah. Come on. We got it. You didn't have to tell us.
No, but that's quite comic, Lucas, so I didn't mind that.
I did like Clark paying the Doctor with diamonds as well.
No, did he bet on himself? Did he crush it? Goal? Like he does at the end of Superman 3? And then he addresses the UN, and as we've mentioned, you get a full-page spread of him. His speech to the UN is, what the hell were you thinking?
That's inspirational. This whole scene is incredible. And this should have set up what has just happened. He should have given this speech, and that's why they're okay with Zod, not the other way around.
Yeah.
Because if I was in the UN and this all-powerful person said, never do that again, I'd be a bit, okay, yeah. No, let's aim the guns at him.
If he'd done this at the foot... Right, so if you'd rewritten it, so him deposing the dictator played more weight into the story.
Yeah.
It literally gets one line here in the UN speech where he says, yeah, I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Right, this speech to the UN should have took place at the beginning of this volume.
Yeah.
And that makes a lot of them go, maybe this Zod guy's right.
Yeah.
That does actually work better. Because this is not an inspirational speech that would make me trust you.
But there's enough in there that it could have been where it dealt differently, where he's like, look, I made a mistake. With this kind of power, it's bound to happen, and we are learning from each other.
Mm.
There's elements in there that would have been Superman.
Mm.
But then ultimately it comes down to all he's missing from that last panel is his red eyes.
Yeah. I don't know, as with volume 1 and 2, I'm of mixed opinions.
Yeah.
Again, it's another The World Hates Superman tract in which our hero gets beaten all to hell. On the other, I was kind of invested in the characters by this point and where he was going to take them and where they were going to go. There's enough interesting characterization and material here to make these worth reading. I do wish he'd gone for the wow factor more than the ultra realism.
Yeah.
And he'd embraced that side of Superman more. Like, again, like we've mentioned, Grant Morrison did in All-Star Superman. But all three of them were interesting to read, and I would have carried on reading it had there been others.
Yeah. And I think there's a part of me that would be a bit inclined. You know, you constantly see those, like, top Superman stories lists all the time. And they're always like, I'd maybe put Volume 1 of Earth 1 on there. Not necessarily as one of the best ones, but as here's a take on it.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not, what is going on here? There are elements of some genuinely interesting stuff, even though there's not enough of it, that this is an interesting take on Superman. I just kind of wish there was more of that.
Yeah.
Or maybe handled a bit differently. But these are compelling. There were certain bits where, like, I got a bit bored on the midway point, but it's like, no, these are films. You got to treat it as a film and keep going kind of thing. But they're worth a read. Are they worth a reread? Maybe in another 10 years' time to see how things have changed.
Mm.
But for the time being, it's just, these are perfectly fine. And that's it.
See, Straczynski's contradicted himself here. He has said it was always intended to be a trilogy.
Yeah.
And then on an interview with him I found again on the Collected Editions website, he said that by the end of Volume 3, all the characters are where he wants them to be. And in a subsequent interview with IGN, he said the ending of the book sets up a major antagonist for later exploration. Dan said, I can keep doing these books as long as I like. So I'd love to do at least one more 3-volume arc, time and circumstances allowing, implying further editions were on the table.
Right.
The ending to Volume 3 heavily suggests this wasn't a trilogy.
Yeah.
There's too many. Why have you set up a female Lex Luthor if you're not going to do anything with it?
Now, you could argue that this is setting up the new universe. There might not have been any intention to carry on going, but let's set up something. That, you know, they're all just origin stories, whatever. But there's a part of me that thinks that they were supposed to be ongoing. They were supposed to combat the Ultimate Verse.
From Geoff Johns earlier on, we're going to do 2 of these a year.
But I think maybe the delays of Batman kept them down. They already had 3 books of this, so they thought, well, let's just make them trilogies. And then, like you mentioned, the New 52 is around the corner, which essentially did what this wanted to do.
Yeah.
You know, it modernized it and rebooted everything, so that makes this a bit redundant in that case.
Yeah, and it certainly does feel like it was axed. It was a conscious decision to not make anymore. I can't find anything on the internet as to why that would be.
Yeah.
And certainly after Dan DiDio leaves DC, this seems like it was his baby and it went away.
It's kind of weird how big of a deal they made about it.
For it to just wither.
Quietly it died, yeah.
It just died on the vine.
Yeah.
Another series with great promise that they didn't do anything with. And that, to me, that is the legacy of Dan DiDio at DC. It's an entire legacy of 20 years, was he editor-in-chief?
Roundabout, 15,
20 years? It's an entire legacy of good ideas never being allowed to reach the fruition or be explored properly.
Yeah.
So you've got the whole New 52, and then you've got these.
Yeah.
And then you've got the thing that he was going to do that ultimately led to his death.
5G, was that?
Yeah, 4G, the 5G thing. And then you've got, he's constantly teasing these massively violent events.
Right.
Where we're going to kill Dick Grayson this time. And eventually that got so tiresome.
Yeah.
That I was just like, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done with this. I'm done with you constantly teasing that you're going to violently kill a character who's been around since 1940.
Just because you don't like him.
Just because you don't like him. You're not a good EIC.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't think he was good, ultimately, for DC Comics. All I can say, you can only ever talk from your own point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And all I can say is that in his tenure as editor-in-chief, I fell to reading absolutely no DC Comics. Apart from special things like this.
Right.
And then he'd bring you back for the New 52 and like for like 6 months or so, you're invested.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it would just go back to what it was before. Even Grant Morrison said he doesn't like his New 52 run on Action Comics.
Yeah. See, I don't think I know enough about DiDio or his ideas enough, but anything that I do know, I kind of like the ideas, but I don't think they were that, like these ones. I love the concept, the Earth One stuff, and I really like the, you know, how they first came out and da-da-da-da-da, but they couldn't have been thought out well enough, because if they were, they would have lasted. So it's like, well, I like what you're doing, Dan, but do you know what you're doing? Do you like what you're doing?
Do you believe in it?
Yeah. And it feels like this is just something he threw at the wall, but he didn't really believe in.
I don't even know.
Was it Geoff Johns? Was it any other number of things?
He was certainly the spokesman behind it. He was certainly the one saying, this. Jeff Johns was obviously the one I've quoted as saying we're going to do two of these a year.
Yeah.
As it turned out, he didn't get three out in 10 years.
How much of that is because Gary Frank is known for his delays?
He's worked monthly comics.
Mm-hmm.
He can do the stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how much of it was Gary Frank or it was Jeff Johns was suddenly too busy doing the TV stuff.
Mm.
And to me, that's DiDio's era in a nutshell. He was far more interested in getting the TV and film stuff going than in the comics.
Right.
The comics always seemed like an afterthought.
So it might have been better if DiDio was the head of multimedia.
They'd add what they've got now. You've got Kevin Feige in charge of the Marvel TV and film stuff.
Yeah.
And you've got, can't even remember his name now, he was in charge of editor-in-chief at Marvel.
Right.
And they can feed off each other. But the thing I do like about James Gunn now being at DC is he's constantly recommending comics to people.
Yeah.
And those comics are going up in sales.
Yeah, and whether you dislike or like James Gunn, at least he knows enough to back himself up.
To talk about which comics are influencing his Superman.
Yeah.
And it's the guy who's playing Superman now, David Corin Sweat,
right,
I think is his name. He's actually said, I've read All-Star Superman because James said, that's not what we're doing.
Right.
But he said, this is the vibe we're going for.
Okay.
And I can't help but think after Superman Returns, which tried to do Donner but with none of the playfulness.
Yeah.
And then Man of Steel, which, let's be honest, is fine, but it's followed up by a do a miserable fest.
Yeah.
To actually have a Superman who seems to take joy in what he does.
Yeah.
And to have an audience of people who are appreciative of him. And I'm not saying you can't do stuff like have him tackle the Authority, which seems like what they're going to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And have him say why your way of doing this is not the right way of going about it.
Mm.
And have some people in government be like, well, what do we do if he ever goes out? The comics have done that all the time. He gave a slither of kryptonite to Batman.
Yeah.
For the same reason. If I'm ever out of control, you're the only one I trust who will kill me.
Yeah.
If you have to. So it's always been there. But to have everybody distrust him, you can see, right, why the Superman of the Snyder films turned out the way he did when you consider two parts of the parental arc in those stories. You've got Pa Kent telling him, maybe you should have let those kids die.
Yeah.
And then you've got Mark Kent. This is the one no one ever mentions, but you've got Mark Kent in Batman versus Superman saying, you don't owe these people anything. So basically, these two parental figures there are saying, you don't owe the people of Earth anything. They've done nothing for you.
Yes.
Wonder Henry Cavill screwed up. And you get from this version of Superman that at least he had a Martha and a Jonathan who did raise him. But the flip side of that is he's got none of his own agency. He doesn't decide, I am going to use my powers for good.
He's told he has to.
It's pushed upon him.
Yeah.
His parents have told him that's what you should do. But he doesn't decide that for himself.
It's a misreading, isn't it? Because Jonathan and Martha Kent make Superman who he is. But this reading of it is, no, Jonathan and Martha Kent make Superman who he is. It's like, no, you're right, but...
But you're not.
Yeah.
The hero of your story has to, at some point, take matters into his own hands.
Mm.
And not necessarily be forced to take matters into his own hands.
But decide to himself.
But decide to. So you've got Luke Skywalker's parents are killed by the Empire.
Yeah.
At that point, he decides, right, I'm going to bring the Empire down. I am going with Ben Kenobi.
Right.
You've got that brilliant moment of realization in Jaws, where Roy Scheider looks out to the sea and goes, right, I'm coming for you.
Yeah.
He decides to go and do something about the problem. At no point in any of these three volumes does Superman decide to solve the problem.
Mm.
In the first one, he's forced into it by the Kiss Army.
Yeah.
In the second one, Parasite comes for him.
Mm-hmm.
In the third one, Zod comes for him.
Yeah.
There's very little proactive engagement going on.
And the only time there is, it's the dictator, and that just doesn't go anywhere.
Superman the movie, he decides to stop Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
He's decided to be Superman. He has decided to use his powers for good.
Mm.
And I just get the feeling that at some point there has been a fundamental misreading, because I've been brainwashed, according to Zack Snyder, a fundamental misreading of who Superman is as a character.
Yeah.
Or, if not a fundamental misreading, an active decision to try and make him Batman.
Yeah, and most of it is you as a person. Now, I don't quite know how to word my point, but Superman is good. Superman represents good. He is the good parts of you. And it says something about you as a person to go, well, I'm not interested in that. I want him to kill someone. That says more about you. Not necessarily that you're a bad person, but where is your goodness? Where is your joy? If you're taking something brightly colored with a smile on his face saying, I am going to help you, to then go, yeah, but could you kill though?
Yeah.
Why? Why would you
Why do you
want
want
that?
to do that?
Yeah. Are you devoid of joy? Like, don't get me wrong, I'd love, gritty, dark films as much as the next person,
Cracking Bones, actually quite fun.
but as a detox from those Earth One stories, I read the issue, the old Action Comics, where Batman goes and plays a prank on Superman on his birthday because it's joy. Superman is just joy. He is happiness. He is helpful.
Yeah, but that
Why?
story says more about male friendship than anything else.
It does,
That
yeah.
Batman has gone out of his way
Yeah.
to bust the balls of his best friend on his
Yeah.
birthday.
And then Superman turns around and goes, well, I've just broken the door of the fortress and now we're stuck in here, so we're both gonna die. Thanks, Batman.
They're just pranking each other.
It's my all-time favorite Superman story, but that's it. Why would you look at that? Why would you look at these characters and go, no, but I want them to be cynical mass murderers? Why? I've never understood it. I've never understood the Snyder interpretation because it's not necessarily a modernization or an update or an interesting character arc. It is completely devoid of who that character is. I never understood it.
No.
And it's not even a case of, but he is capable of doing this thing. Yes, but doesn't. That's why he's good.
Yeah.
It's going, but I don't get it. Why wouldn't he do that?
I don't get it, so I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
Whereas, but so we're exactly the same as him. We don't
So
get why you would make these characters into killers.
make a new character, do something
Do
else.
Brightburn
Yeah.
instead of Superman.
But yeah.
So, oh well, there was Superman Earth One. It was fine.
It was fine.
Interestingly, none of this has been collected as one trade paperback with all three in. Batman has,
Right.
Wonder Woman has,
Right.
Superman has not.
Batman and Wonder Woman have had films since the last Superman film.
Maybe we'll get a collection. Batman was in the Superman film. And only Wonder Woman's had a series of solo films.
Yeah, but that film was a Batman film.
Wonder Woman wasn't. Wonder Woman
No.
was good.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman 1984, not so much.
Well, I've not seen him. One day I will. One day I will sit down and
And watch Wonder Woman 1984,
I
Aquaman,
will
Blue
watch.
Beetle, Shazam.
Yeah.
You're really going to waste that amount of
I'm
time.
going to start from Man of Steel, and I'm going to go all the way up to the Flash.
I'll make sure there's no sharp objects near you.
And you'll come to my house one day, and there'll be writing and scribbles all over the
I would love you
bedroom.
to watch The Flash. I would genuinely love you to watch that because I don't think I should suffer alone.
Oh, have you not seen it yet?
Oh, I've seen it.
Oh, right, okay. No,
I think I thought it was utter toss.
maybe if I might inject red wine straight into the veins and watch it, we'll see.
We'll see what happens. Right, we haven't decided what we're doing next time.
We
That's going
haven't.
to be a staff meeting when we finish recording.
Do we have stuff?
Yeah, me and you. So, as is the norm, drop us an email if you want to talk to us, heykidscomics@virginmedia.com, or social media messages. Both of us are on the various different platforms, as Andrew Leyland or Michael Leyland. We don't hide behind stupid pseudonyms.
Does anyone?
Lots of people do.
Okay.
We stand by what we say, stupid though it may be.
I am stubborn. I
Yes.
will stand behind.
You can buy us a coffee on Ko-fi. The thing for that is in the end credits. But you can also rate us, review us. That kind of algorithm crap works,
Does
apparently.
it?
Yes. So we'll be back next month with whatever the hell it is we decide to cover from the big boys' book of interesting things. We'll see you all again next time. Bye bye.
Goodbye.
Hey Kids Comics is a The Devil Will Make Work for Idle Hands to Do production and hosted by Andrew and Michael Leyland. All opinions expressed in the show are the opinions of the hosts and no one else. The free-to-use music that closes and opens the show was the sci-fi cyberpunk trailer by somebody called Stringer Bell on the Pixabay.com free-to-use website. Thank you very much to him. If you would like to support the show, you can buy Michael and I, or both of us, or one of us, a coffee. Go to ko-fi.com, that's ko-fi.com,
ko-fi.com/aleyland. In 1 month, an all-new episode of Hey Kids Comics coming in your ears. It's a date.